morning, everybody. It's great to be with you. It really is a pleasure to have first got the invitation, but also to have had a chance to talk with so many really expert transportation officials. This is not the usual crowd I run with. I normally spend a lot of time talking to federal lawmakers charged with writing national transportation policy who often have no idea what they're talking about in transportation. So it is great to be with you. And that's as good as the jokes get, so you got to work pretty proud of them. I want to tee up and, oh, I'm going to need some technical. Is there a,
oh,
are you ready? I have a presentation. Truth be told, I'm a federal lobbyist who's not a transportation expert either. But I sleep in a lot of Holiday Inn Express, so I can articulate a little bit about some of the concerns we've got. So what I do for International Papers, I get tasked with challenges from our business teams. And they run the gamut from, labor management issues to energy policy and now, in particular, transportation issue that I'm going to tee up to talk to you about. The issue at hand is trying to gain productivity for our truck transportation business. We'd like to see increase in productivity in every aspect of our transportation business, but for today's purposes, we're focused on truck transportation. And in particular, we're trying to make a statutory change in federal policy that would allow, under certain conditions, properly equipped six-axle tractor trailer trucks to carry up to 97,000 pounds on federal interstate highways. A number of you are familiar with the efforts. There's quite a mixed set of concerns and so forth. So what I want to do is to take a little time and walk you through the issue, talk about the coalition that we formed to try to get this accomplished, and about some of the dynamics in the debate that make this different this year, and I think improve our chances to this year, this rewrite of transportation law, which could go on for a number of years, as is prologue. And talk about generally how we're organizing, how we intend to get this issue accomplished. CTP is a broad-based coalition of shippers that are focused on this one thing, and that's that increased weight limits for six-axle vehicles. We formed CTP coming out of the last, really starting last summer, after the experience of the last transportation rewrite, where we put this issue forward, but did not have a strong enough coalition effort to actually change the hearts and minds of Congress and get it approved. We got so far as to having Congressman Oberstar was entertaining the notion of some pilot projects in a few key states, Minnesota, Maine, and South Carolina, I believe. And that effort bogged down during conference negotiations and never went forward. We came out of that experience with a couple things. First, we were convinced that the pilot project approach is not going to be the way to do this. No one's going to make an investment in trucking equipment for a 2-year, 3-year, 4-year pilot project that only is within particular states when these rigs are running on an interstate basis. Secondly, we were never going to win this issue if we just kept it, theater and evidence against the same walls anyway. We need a broader base group of folks, broad national effort, and we need to reach out to people like you throughout the country who have some expertise in this subject and we can learn from. And hopefully we can partner together to either shape our proposal and improve it and figure out a way to get you all interested enough and comfortable enough with what we're trying to do that you might put in a good word for us at the appropriate time with your federal lawmakers. So that's really our goal. We've grown the group. We just did our 100th member 2 weeks ago. These are just a smattering of the organizations involved. They run the gamut from relatively niche market groups like Forest Resources Association, represented by Neil Ward, to National Association of Manufacturers, Cattle and Feed Association, NIDLE, and others. We've got a lot of companies. They're heavily in the food business, but in sort of an agricultural product food business. But they're all, they share the common commonality that they're all, at times, different products carrying very heavy loads on trucks. And just looking at that to measure efficiency that they can get from a proposal like this. Our goals are, as I indicated, pretty straightforward and pretty narrow. The other thing about the coalition is we continue to be caught up in the sort of truck size and weight debate. And we wanted to distract ourselves from truck size and weight. And we're quick to say, whenever I hear the words truck size and weight, this is not about truck size. This is about truck weight. This is about taking a truck that is not currently, that is fully weighed out with heavy rolls of paper, and still in space for another roll or two, but can't put that load in place because of the current 80,000 megawatt interstate. Whereas they're often running on many of your state roads, permitted to do so, at a higher weight limit, with a 5-axle grid. So it's not that the country's not experiencing a lot of heavier vehicles on the roads. They're just on the state roads, which I am told tend to be less capable sometimes of carrying the heavier loads than the interstate highways. And, I think, our pitch is that if you begin to allow this on the interstates, that you perhaps take some of that pressure off some of these state roads. It's important that the trucks have that additional axle, that they've got braking power in that axle, and that we couple this proposal with a heavy vehicle use, we increase the heavy vehicle permit fee. The legislation calls for an increase of $800 for that fee, and I suspect that will be the subject of some negotiation before the final bill is written, if indeed we reach that point. So we're willing to pay to play, essentially. We are not asking for this change, without putting something on the table. That is, we are willing to pay the right carriers heavier loads, because it's in our interest to gain that extra measure of productivity. We're going to reduce our transportation costs, and we're going to have to put some money, forward to cover. And we would like to target that permit fee to bridge repair, because if you add you all know these numbers, if a 97,000 pound 22 wheeler, essentially, on average, displaces less weight per tire than an 80,000 pound 18 wheeler, to run the man. Depending on how it's loaded, what kind of load you're carrying, that, certain axles could see an increase, but on average, those tires are actually displacing less weight. We think then that puts the burden of any infrastructure challenges presented by this on bridges, and it clearly has a greater impact on any types of bridge. So that's why we'd like to target this increase to the to bridge repair and maintenance. And just to clarify in your mind exactly what we're talking about, and this is your on the right is the 6-axle bridge of the envision. I was over in the road that leads from the tunnel to London the summer before that. I didn't see any trucks that weren't six axle goods. All of Europe has heavier weight limits, a lot more uniformity and harmonization. Canada has heavier weight limits, Mexico has heavier weight limits on their federal roads. We're one of the last holdouts in that regard. You all know this as well, provincial requirements. I talk about preaching the choir. It's no secret that the road's going to get more congested. We found this interesting enough. We called the Texas Transportation Institute. We'll just try to get heard of them. I had a chance to meet David last night, and they do great work. But you just look at the growth in congestion. We hope that we get back to a growing economy soon. We're shipping more paper from our paper mills in the months and years ahead. We know we will get out of this at some point. And when we do, we're going to have a lot of constraining events. And so, the real challenge is let's see what we can do to exact a little bit increase in productivity from, you know, our truck transportation, and perhaps make a dent in the growth of this congestion. We're quick to say we're not going to reduce the number of trucks on the road with this proposal, but we will reduce the number of trucks needed to ship any given amount of freight from point A to point B. That's our goal. And if we can slow the growth of what we're going to see in the years ahead by doing that, we think that's a positive. I've mentioned the competitive disadvantage we have with other countries. The concerns that are really the forefront of our thinking are just the fuel costs. I mean, last summer's spike was unbelievable in the impact on shippers. And that had tremendous ramifications throughout the economy. I mentioned the weight limits on, state roads that are often higher. It's causing, you all could probably give me some long dissertations on the and I hope you will before the day's over on a really short dissertation. On the impact that has. I'm going to be learning more about that aspect of this. We look at this proposal. I mean, some of the, we see benefits from a range of areas. We've got, in the state, and I'll talk a little bit more about some of the studies that have come out in recent years in this regard. But, we see this reducing vehicle miles traveled to ship a ton of goods. And, you all know this as well as anybody, reducing VMT is often correlates to the reduced accident rate. And the more VMT you take off the road, the lower the accident rate. And I'm wrong on that point, is it? Yeah. Okay. We see this proposal spurring private investment in trucking industry infrastructure. They're either going to be retrofitting and upgrading trailers, or replacing trailers altogether. And that'll probably be the most efficient way. And there's some can be retrofitted for, my understanding, $6,000 to $8,000, but often this is for private investment. We don't talk a lot about spurring private investment in this country anymore. We've been talking a lot about spurring public investment, but, if we've got an idea to actually spur private investment, we think, it's worth Congress considering. One of the key things that's changed in this debate, though, since we started this several years ago, is the whole environmental aspect of it. And I'll give you an example of our, something that was related specifically to the paper about the impact of that. But generally and overall, this is an issue about U.S. competitiveness. It's costing U.S. manufacturers a lot more on a relative basis to move products around the country than it's costing our competitors to move products around their country and get it to our shores. That's an issue. And that impacts our ability to produce products here, ship them offshore, and compete with the stuff coming out of other countries in the international market. And that really does have an impact on them. Now, I see we honed in on one of our paper mills and did kind of a deep dive on the how this proposal would impact. We had a mill in North Alabama, in Portland, Alabama, that last century, machines were actually running at capacity. We were sending 600 fully weighed out trucks per week out of that one paper mill in a cross-treated rail network for one company. They were going throughout the Southeast. They were going places where, we put as much freight on the rail as we possibly can. That's our first option. We use some barges as well and some, waterways where we can, but we put an awful lot of freight on rail. But we have customers that will call us at 5 in the afternoon and want a truckload shipment on their dock at 8 the next morning, and there's one way to get there. And we don't intend to lose those, precious customers, because we, by then put some on a rail train, it would take, a week or so to get it delivered. So 600 trucks a week, increasing the weight limit to 97,000 pounds, would allow us to cut that the number of deliveries to 450, the number of truckload shipments per week, one mill, to 450 shipments. That's a few things. There's 150 trucks off the road. That's if you just add up the weight of those trucks empty. That's 5.25 million pounds that's now not traversing roads and bridges throughout the southeast. Deliver the same 27 million pounds of product that we were shipping last night. The carbon emission reductions alone were 300,000 pounds a week. And the fuel savings vary greatly because last summer's fuel costs were so high, and at that time, 70,000 pounds a week could be saved up. That's obviously not the other. 300,000 pounds of CO2 emissions a week. And why are we not doing this? Is our question to Congress. If you look at it, from a variety of angles, and we just think this comes out of the delineation. Now, we've got some new dynamics that, in addition to the environmental arguments that have been in place since the last highway bill, Thursday night, Wisconsin. I haven't had a chance to talk. I know you're from Wisconsin. I talked to several folks from Wisconsin last night. Wisconsin DOT put out a study that was issued this January. And the salient points that I took from that were that their estimation, now they weighed, they estimated this, I believe it was a 98,000-pound configuration, 6-hour configuration. But they wrote in that study that if this proposal had been in place in 2006, we would have had 90 fewer heavy truck-related accidents on the highways of those towns. Attributed to this kind of configuration, which is taking trucks off the road to deliver, X amount of goods. And it would have saved Wisconsin shippers $150 million in transportation costs. We think that's pretty significant. The UK had the same experience. They put this exact proposal in place in 2001, 97,000 pounds on 6 axes. They found that, and they came back and measured in 2007, and the experience was that tons of goods shipped during that time had gone up significantly, while their vehicle miles traveled to deliver those goods had leveled off. And the accident rate, the fatality rate among accidents involving heavy vehicles had declined. That is exactly the experience we want to replicate in the United States. So, but we have some challenges in that. We have some variety of groups that, for a number of reasons, and there are different reasons, are challenging our efforts. First, on the safety side, there are some very organized, well-organized groups under the umbrella of Public Citizen Organization. Most notable is the Coalition Against Bigger Trucks. And again, I'm quick to say these aren't bigger. It's just heavier. But that coalition is comprised of people who have been victims of truck-related accidents. And there's no more powerful voice lobbying Congress than a victim of an accident like this. Those of us, and I'm sure many of you have as well, we've been touched by highway accidents. I mean, there's nothing more searing that happens. We do have some facts on our side. As international paper, we take safety as an extraordinarily serious part of the way we do business. We are very proud of that. Our TIR is now below 1% for the first time in the company's history. We are at one time were the largest user of the OSHA Voluntary Protection Program. The highest levels of safety excellence at OSHA, been more facilities certified under that program than any other company in the country. And so General Electric discovered the program and beat us. For a long time we had that. And we're not going to do anything to jeopardize the safety of our people or our fellow citizens on the highway. So we're not in this to change the dynamic in safety on highways. We're in it to improve safety. And according to the data we see, this will do that. On road wear, I already talked about that. That's where we get hit. Why are you going to be tearing up the highways? And again, the evidence we see is that that's not, yes, there'll be a greater impact on bridges, but, we have a choice in this country of, how we're going to, approach it. We're simply going to have to put more money in bridge repair. We know that. And we have we're coming forward with a plan to do that as part of this package. There is a charge in the railroads, we alluded to this yesterday, made that you know, this was a shift transportation mode, and it would reduce rail utilization. We generally don't see that in the market. We put, as I said, we put as much freight on the rail as we possibly can, and we tend to continue to do that. In fact, the state of Wisconsin study, yes, found no, they did not see that displacement of from rail to truck was going to happen. They did not see this effort as taking away freight from the rail side. But that hasn't stopped the railroads from being one of our most global opponents. If you go to the American Association of Railroads website, you can find the worst case scenario on this issue. We get opposed by the painters, and it's my understanding that they're more heavily involved in the less than truckload side of the business, and they see this as perhaps shifting some of their customer base, you know, and it's a competitive issue. That doesn't stop them from engaging with, you know, safety aspects and the mobile shifts and so forth. And the owner-operator drivers are also, as an institution, opposed, even though there is a very vigorous debate within that organization on this issue. But again, they're more heavily oriented toward the less than truckload side, so they just see this as, you know, as competitive. When we had a witness from IP that testified before the House Transportation Committee last summer, and we laid out our arguments. They came right back and said that, well, the studies show that you can't get the same kind of stopping power from a 100,000-pound rig or 97,000-pound rig that you get from a 80,000. And well, yes, there was a study that showed that. It was a study that showed that a 80,000-pound five-axle vehicle stops more quickly than a 100,000-pound five-axle vehicle. I could have told you that. But the federal studies that looked at six-axle vehicles found that a 97,000-pound six-axle vehicle has a de minimis difference in stopping power from an 80,000-pound five-axle vehicle. So it's important that we're comparing apples to apples and not apples to oranges. So a lot of this debate from a lot of our opponents is all about apples and oranges. And that's kind of where we're at. So we are getting organized. We formed our coalition. We are formalizing our coalition. We are going to start fundraising and launch a more vigorous public relations campaign that's targeted to the members of the House T&I Committee and the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, plus the key players in this debate. And we're developing the full-scale, active, grassroots, campaign, if you will, to try to get this done. This is, you can't read the words, but from our website, which is at transportationproductivity.org, and by the way, I've left a little flyer out of the table, which you can grab, with more information about who we are and kind of the, who the members are. And this is a grassroots letter that we have up on the website that with a couple of clicks our members can fire out a letter to their members of Congress to weigh in on this issue. This is just one piece of a comprehensive campaign, but it at least is a start and it generates a lot of support. It's kind of like your artillery softening up the battlefield for you when the rest of the troops come in. I mean, you have to have lots of letters going in on an issue before you're considered serious. Exactly. So we're going about that business and working at that time. So we feel we have a narrow window of opportunity to make this work. And we're committed to developing the kind of campaign that will strike you this time. We think it makes sense from competitiveness standpoint, fuel efficiency, environmental performance, infrastructure constraints, so on and so forth. A lot of good reasons to do this. And we're working hard to try to build the average that'll be successful. Leo, I was fascinated by your discussions, and I sense the frustration that you feel with how Congress approaches these issues. But one thing I can tell you, my experience has been, if you're asking, when you ask members of Congress to take on an issue, champion an issue for it, that's going to require them to take hits back home. You better have an organized plan as to how you're going to alleviate their home problem in order to get stuff. And to the extent that you all can hone in, whether it's this issue or others, hone in on your key objectives you want to push forward, and then develop an actual campaign. You have to develop a campaign to sustain to move an issue in Washington, and it's got to be broad-based, consensus-driven, and really just move. And you've got to go into districts, and you've got to do the hard work of grassroots. You've got to identify people in key congressional districts, you can speak with the member, you've got to organize fly-ins, and so, you just have to do all that work to get this done. Many of you have been involved in these kinds of efforts, kind of preaching the choir. But that's the kind of effort we're putting into this, and we're taking it to every member of the House T&I Committee and the Senate BPW Committee and beyond, and to the extent that you all have thoughts, suggestions, watch out for us, advice or otherwise that you can share with us. I'm eager to keep your hearing. But most of all, I'd like to get your, at the end of the day, if we can alleviate any concerns you've got, I'd love to get your quiet whispers in the ear of your congressional representatives to convince them that this might be something worth taking in. So with that, I'm happy to open the floor to any questions. Yes, sir.
From your side of the world, so I understand the productivity piece of this and the importance of it, but it's also a coalition among coalitions. The carriers have got to have buy-in, and I think the APA pretty much is. The one bullet point you were talking about, charts that you didn't talk about, deals with carrier rates and their return on investment. They're paying $21,000 now for a 53-foot trailer that $80,000 comes from us. Now we're going to tack on another $17,000. That extra set of dollars underneath there, that's going to cost them $27,000. So their return on investment, the shippers, and I know the Wisconsin study said it was going to save $150 million in shippers, but that was assuming the truck rate was going to stay the same.
That's a small. I agree on that. We anticipate, our truck rates, we certainly would anticipate for our carriers that utilize this, they know they're going to get it.
Carrier want to gain productivity, carrier also has to gain productivity. I've been on both sides, so maybe I was in transition from 48 foot trailers for 53, and carriers initially charged more for that, then they put. They lost the head of paperwork, and so to get the carriers buying it, which is where you've got to have those guys, their ATAs have got to have that reasonable return on investment that you guys will have, and then you've got solidarity among the two groups, then I think we've got something to walk forward with.
I appreciate that. We are actually coordinating very closely with ATA. They have a broader agenda on the business agenda. And so it's probably, they're looking for, bigger trucks, multiple iterations, combination business and so forth. They've been working with us very closely on every aspect of our campaign, and we do have a lot of carriers that are involved. We had a fly-in 2 weeks ago. We had 70 organizations who were represented, quite a few of our trucking companies that came in and joined us. So we are collaborating. We work closely with the Michigan Ag Tech Coalition, the Forest Resources Association, but also the ASET Coalition, which has been in this space for a while, to save and efficient transportation. And they have the more heavy representation from the trucking companies. That's a good thing.
I think one thing you have to keep in mind is that the trucking companies and the ATA, our experience has been with real grassroots opposition to the independent owner operators. And they're the ones that are going to be most directly hit by capital investment relying on return on their rates. They're in a truly competitive atmosphere. They've been decimated by the fuel costs last year. There's still a lot of them running out there. They're the ones that killed our truck by the way increases for 5 years running in Minnesota, day in, day alone. That was all there. In some cases, we have farmers who are also running trucking companies who are, you know, arguing both sides of the issue. They want to have trucks with higher capacity to get more corn to market and be more efficient in the farming operation. But as long as they're running 20 or 30 trucks on the site, we contracted in and sent out there. We also don't want to be going to the capital business. So that grassroots is where the opposition is going to come from, not the APA and not the shipper-driven large carriers. The other thing I'd like to point out is that getting the marine industry and the container business, including the railroad, into this, I think would be a good synergy because, and especially internationally certified marine shipping containers have a designed weight of about 31 tons, a little over 31 tons that they can load to. And even with their higher fare weight, except the chassis and everything, right now they're only carrying 24 tons on the road. You increase the limit to 97,000 pounds gross vehicle weight, and you basically can take that cargo container up to the design limit. And that's one thing we talked about yesterday with the marine industry, is that right now we're looking at specialized corridors and for overloads, basically scrap steel and raw materials and like in cargo containers. That will probably go away if we had this kind of integration.
That's a great thing. That's right. Yeah, and just on the owner operators, we are working, we're kind of got a little grassroots initiative to help move them as well. So we are taking a look how to sort of mitigate their opposition.
Yep. And it still has a little bit of the green can when you think of the course one year, you know, still a candidate, you can permit take on the option of permit them and under just the low. So they're actually moving already. Administrative hurdle typically that takes place. The other thing I think the states need to remember is that most of the states out of gas in the Mississippi Valley Coalition already allow over 80,000 pounds on their state road. I mean, most states that have to be in agriculture or timber production or in Michigan and steel and other products are already moving over 80,000 pounds, but they're moving on two-lane roads with a 10-minute pavement and low standard bridges. And so there's huge safety, infrastructure savings from allowing those vehicles to travel the roads that are designated for accounting. You get interstate system of factory payments, HS20 or HS25 vehicles, bridge standards, and they're advised. So there's huge benefits all around if you allow those vehicles that are already allowed over 80,000 pounds of work to travel on lower standard roads to simply travel higher standards.
Well, we had, not just on that point, but the best example we had of that was in Arkansas. We had a facility that, in order to get the trees to it, was taking a 35-mile detour on state roads and passing the school crosswalk to avoid a 4-mile stretch of interstate. And so we got, you know, put it systematically, you know, taking 35 miles off with transit. And that's just silly. Good time. Okay, well, thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you.